Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome to this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot. My co-host is Jim DeRogatis. And if you want to be the first to hear our bonus podcast, become a Sound Opinions member on Patreon, like Jason Dilworth of Fredonia, New York. Thanks for your support, Jason.
This week, we want to remember Seymour Stein by playing Greg's interview with him from 2015. Stein, one of the great set of ears, as they say, in music industry history. More of a fan than a mogul, and a great loss, Greg. You know, for the most part, that industry no longer exists the way it did for 50 years is not a loss to anyone who loves music. But people like Seymour Stein, who could hear a band in a grungy place like CBGB before it was legendary, or Madonna in his hospital room via boombox, or Ice-T out in South Central L.A., and hear the potential and sign them. That's a wonderful talent that we don't see that much anymore. Our chat, your chat, I wish I was there, is coming up with Seymour Stein in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island, so we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. We are back, and here's Greg's 2015 interview with Seymour Stein that we first aired in 2018.
I talked with Stein in 2015 in front of an audience in Chicago, and we discussed his life, his career, Sire's many successes, but I started by asking him how his remarkable career actually began.
I was working in the Brill Building at that time, my last job. I was working for Lieber & Stola and George Golden, Redbird Records. I had come from Billboard to King Records in Cincinnati. Richard was on the 10th floor. We were on the 9th floor. We kept meeting in the elevators of the Brill Building. He was getting a little fed up with his partners, and I was a little worried that Redbird was going to collapse, which it eventually did. And we started a company. It was actually first a production company, and then soon rolled over into a record company.
The market was crowded with labels, even at that time. Some huge
more
labels.
More crowded then.
Yeah.
Thankfully, more crowded then, with great indie labels. And
well, what made you think, hey, they need another one? What was going to separate you from the pack?
Well, I just wanted a piece. I wasn't looking to put anybody out of business. We were just looking to do our thing, maybe do it a little differently. I had some ideas about putting out music from England. I mean, this was 2 years after the Beatles, but what people didn't realize was the early Beatle records came out on the VJ label right here in Chicago. Love Me Do and Please Please Me.
Love, love me do. You know I love you.
And this was a black-owned company. The V stood for Vivian Carter, the J for Jimmy Bracken. Great, great company. That and Chess and I don't want to get off the track. This is a great city, a great music city. I have so many great memories here.
You came in contact with some of the biggest figures in the music business at an early age.
Yes.
And Seymour, I have to say, one of the things I've always admired about you is people, your artists talk about you in such glowing terms. I mean, Bell and Sebastian wrote a song about you,
yes,
which did not disparage you, which, you know, to me is like, okay,
no,
that's somehow this guy did things the right way.
Seymour's time, I've been lonely.
You did, you know, you did remarkable work with Sire. When you talk about indie, I think the music always led you. And you were, you know, you kept this label afloat and did some great work for about 10 years, and then I think really hit your stride during that new wave slash punk era where you and Sire were at the center of a musical revolution. There's no other way to say it. You put out the debut records by some of the most important bands of that period. You know, you're talking about Ramones, Pretenders, Talking Heads.
Richard Hell and the Voidoids, the Dead Boys.
Late last night, I went for a walk down by the river near my home.
You go back and read some of the press, though, of some of these early bands. I mean, there was a segment, obviously, that got it. The, you know, some of the writers really understood that music, but I don't think the mainstream industry understood the Ramones or the Talking Heads when they first came out.
Oh,
they
no.
go, what is this noise?
Yeah.
And you
well,
were coming
well,
out of
an era. Especially the Ramones, they didn't understand. Some people just thought that, you know, David Byrne was a whirling dervish or something, but they really didn't understand the Ramones at all.
Let's go. The fun is in the daytime. They're going through a tight one. You can listen to their mind. Let's drink up.
You know, I had two bands on my label that were managed by the same guy, and he said, if you don't throw the Ramones off the label, we're going to sue you to get out of the contract. And you know, look, I believed in them, you know. I had heard about them from a lot of people, but was always away. I was supposed to go see them. I got sick, and my wife went instead. She came back raving about them. So I the next day, I rented a studio, and I had them perform in about 15, 20 minutes. They must have done 18 or 20 songs. and I signed them immediately. We spent the rest of the time, you know, discussing the deal. And they went in the studio a couple of days later. I really wanted them. They wanted me and as Osire. And, you know, we were off.
That's amazing that you saw that at that point, because I think if you looked at the Ramones, and I've met them all subsequently, they didn't say rock star. You know, it wasn't like Joey Ramone says, you know, I'm a rock star. It was like, this is the ultimate outsider.
I think you put them all together as a band, which was what they were. I saw it. I mean, I saw something really, really spectacular, something coming up from the streets. You have to be open to everything. The first million-selling album and single that I had was by a band from Holland called Focus. And, you know, nobody understood it. This was a guy playing, a flute and yodeling. And it was a song called Hocus Pocus. I don't know if any of you know that song. I put out some pretty weird things. And I'm not afraid to be wrong. And I'm probably wrong much more than I'm right. But you've got to take chances.
Yeah, and you obviously did. Tell us a little bit about The Pretenders.
Got this in pocket. Got that though. I'm going to use it. Intention.
Well, the Pretenders is a unique story. Our last distributor before we hooked up with Warner's was ABC Records, and they had no labels internationally, but they had one in the UK. The A&R guy there and I went to see Billy Idol's group, and we wanted to sign them, me for America and. But we didn't. They signed with Chrysalis. And then about a year and a half later, he said to me, I've got this great girl singer. I said, you got to come see her. I think you'll want to sign her.
Now the reason we're here as man and woman is to love each other, take care of each other.
What's interesting to me is about this era, and Chrissie Hynde is a great example of it. I think most women were sort of viewed as eye candy. Joan Jett is an exception, I think, and Chrissie Hynde was definitely an exception too. Kind of this tough woman in front of a band, leading the band, playing the guitar. That wasn't conventional at that point either, and you went for it.
But women don't have to be tough to be, they can if they want to. I mean, to me, one of my heroes I would love to have worked with is Linda Ronstadt. I think she's so amazing. Men aren't the same, why should women, there's more women around than there are men, I don't buy that,
Yeah, of course. But you saw it ahead of the industry, that you,
no,
you
I
again took a chance.
I saw it ahead of the industry. I just love The Pretenders, mm-hmm. That's all. I mean, I go in with no expectations. I think that's the best way to do it,
I want to backtrack just a little bit here, because around that same time, that same era, on the origins of this term in application to music, new wave.
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep because my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire.
I deserve the particular credit for using the term new wave, which was ridiculous because, people were calling it punk. People who loved it were calling it punk, and people who hated it were calling it a punk. Listen, the worst thing you can do is put categories around you. The more things you do, the more you narrow down the potential of it. There's good music and there's bad music. Forget the bad music, and how good is the good music? That's what it's all about.
This is Sound Opinions, and we are listening to Greg's live conversation in 2015 with music industry legend Seymour Stein, talking about those years at Sire Records.
Yeah, Jim, as you had said earlier, he was instrumental in signing a wave of new wave bands in the late 70s. But a decade later, he and Sire would be at the vanguard of another major musical movement. We're talking about West Coast hip-hop. Sire signed Ice-T in 1987, but as Stein told me, it nearly didn't happen.
That was almost a failure of mine. I always like to think of myself as being on top of new things. But I must have been asleep or too busy or too much time in the UK when rap started.
When I wrote about parties, someone always died. When I tried to ride happy, yo, I knew I lied. Cause I live a life of crime. Why play a blind? A simple looking anyone with 2 cents would know I'm
when I've been left behind. Then I realized or discovered that almost everything in rap had come from east of the Mississippi. So I started looking in California and I found Ice-T. And he was a little suspicious. He said, you know, why do you want to sign me? He says, what do you know about this music? I said, well, you know, I just love it. He said, well, tell me. So I said, look, to me, rap is like the kind of music you have to record and get out real quick, because it's political, it tells a story, it's like a newspaper. I said, I'm familiar with that kind of music because one of my favorite kinds of music is calypso. And he didn't know what calypso was. And I played him Gene and Dinah by the Mighty Sparrow.
Well, it's Gene and Dinah, Rosita and Clementina, from the corner posing, that your life is something they're selling.
He got up and he hugged me, you know, he said, we got a deal, you know, and, you know, so that's it.
Well, I think people now perceive Ice-T as kind of like this mainstream figure. He plays a cop on TV, which is the greatest irony of all time, I think.
You have no idea.
But I happen to know, I met Ice-T, was one of the first stories I did when I was started writing for the Tribune. And the amount of fear, and, you know, he scared people. That music scared people. And you sort of waded in there and said, you know what, this is important music. I mean, to my mind, hip-hop, the West Coast hip-hop especially, presaged everything that happened in the L.A. riots in 92. But what did you see in Ice-T's music that was like, this is something that I need to put out?
Was something exceptional. I was out in L.A., and nothing that I heard, nothing came even close to what Ice-T was.
Race war, people getting killed in the street, blood on your feet, the ends don't meet. And who they gonna blame it on me? Try the media, try the PD, try your TV, try your quest for wealth. Anybody but yourself. But once the bullets start flying, people start dying. It's all because of lying. History books
the details. I think one of the criticisms of the music industry is that it's sort of follow the leader. A trend starts, follow the trend.
Once it's a trend, it's over. I'm looking anywhere and everywhere. I don't believe in trends.
And you started a lot of trends. That's the thing.
Well, I don't.
You know, Madonna's a great example, an artist who still pays respect to you.
I mean, I deserve some credit for signing her and all, but the truth is, the best thing I did was after the second album that she made, I kind of got out of the way because she knew better than her manager, better than me. You know, she knew where she was going and what to do. And when you have somebody like that, you know, that's what you should do.
The criticism of Madonna when she came out is, oh, she can't sing, she's got great producers behind her, this will never last. You saw something there. What was it that you saw?
What I saw most of all, usually what I look for is songs. And she only had one song, and it was a good song. I mean, so that's not true. See, I was in the hospital, and I looked like a mess. You know, I was there 2 weeks, and I had to be there for another 2 weeks. I said, I don't want her to think that I'm going to croak, you know, and everything. So I had my barber come in and cut my hair. I sent my secretary home to get me. You know, I was wearing the pajamas with the slit up the back from the hospital. I sent home for real pajamas and a bathrobe and all that. And she could care less. She just wanted a deal. She just, you know, where do I sign? I mean, that's what I said. Look, first of all, you need a lawyer. She signed the contract pretty quickly. We were in the studio pretty quickly. And she put the first single out, and it did quite well. Called Everybody. It's the same song that she played me a demo of in the hospital. Look, a Madonna doesn't come along all the time, you know. And the same could be said for people like Bruce Springsteen and the Beatles. They're just exceptional. Fats Domino, James Brown, lots of them.
How has what has happened in the music industry the last 15 years with digital affected the role that record companies play in the way music is distributed and heard by people like that are in this audience?
I mean, it has affected me. It's a lot harder now, but it hasn't affected me in that I have to change what I do. I liked it a lot better the way it was, but, you know, even then I was pretty old, and it's not that easy to change. But it's affected the major labels considerably, how records are, you know, released, promoted. I regret that. I mean, I have a record collection, you know, I mean, and I treasure it. But look, things are what they are, you know. This is a new generation. You know, look, there'll always be a music business. There was a music business before there was a recorded music business.
You've got artists now. I use an example, a local artist, Chance the Rapper, who is a huge success story, one of the biggest success stories, hasn't sold a single record. There's the argument now being made, do you even need a record company?
I think you do, but if an artist thinks he doesn't, you know, there's no reason why in today's business he can't try and be somewhat successful. I think that the greatest of artists shouldn't do this in particular, because think about all the time that they're wasting doing things that other people can do for them when they should be concentrating on what they do best. I mean, that's just what I think. I mean, I don't dare tell anybody what to do.
Mm-hmm. Is there a common thread to the artists that you've signed? Is there something about...
I like them all.
Yeah, you like them all. Was there something about their personality or their music that sort of had something in common that hit you the right way?
Not really, you know. And I'm just as proud as some things that I've signed that weren't big hits. In the last days of apartheid, I heard this record called Scatterlings of Africa by a band called Jaluka. And I signed that, and it didn't sell in America, and I was very sad. It actually was a big hit in France, number one. And this was a mixed racial band, you know, when these things were forbidden. They are the scatterlings of Africa. There's lots of things I've done that have not been, you know, financial successes, but I don't regret them. And that not only don't I regret DeLuca, it's something that gives me pride. I certainly have no regrets. I mean, music is my life. And I can't play an instrument. I can't. I mean, I can sing, but I get booed. But I mean, I've had a glorious life. I mean, no regrets.
Thank you so much, Seymour Stein.
Thank
Pleasure.
You.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Make the future big. That is it for Greg's interview with Seymour Stein. As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts in our Patreon community or our Facebook group. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, our associate producer Sol Delgadillo, and our intern Lauren Holt. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott. Thanks for listening.